Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, why Christians are so divided over President Trump. The discussion has been simmering since the president got elected, with the enthusiastic help of many evangelical Christian voters. Other Christian voters have deplored the president's behavior and his political conduct. Now, a December editorial in Christianity Today asserting that President Trump should be removed from office has brought the disagreements into the open and into a full boil. The op-ed, written by the outgoing editor-in-chief, reads in part, "The president of the United States attempted to use his political power to coerce a foreign leader to harass and discredit one of the president's political opponents. This is not only a violation of the Constitution, more importantly, it is profoundly immoral." Today, the new editor-in-chief of Christianity Today joins us, along with a guest who deeply disagrees with the op-ed and your view. If you identify as an evangelical Christian or a person of faith, do you struggle with reconciling your support for the president's policies with what Christianity Today calls his moral deficiencies that have damaged both the spirit and the future of the American people? Do you worry about the rift that President Trump's behavior has caused among Christian believers? So I want to know from all voters of faith, but particularly from evangelicals this morning, whether you've been struggling with reconciling support for some of what President Trump does, but also with what his conduct betrays, what his moral deficiencies are, according to Christianity Today. And I wonder if you worry about the rift that President Trump's behavior is creating among Christian believers. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter. And I see a lot of you weighing in this morning. It's at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Daniel Farrell is with us. He's the new editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. He's the former senior pastor of the Colonial Church in Edina, and he joins us in studio. And Pastor, welcome. Our first name's all right from here on in?
It is. My last name is Harold.
I'm sorry. Oh, I said Farrell, and it is Harold. Thank you. Good to have you with us.
Thank
Kristen
you. Good to be here.
Hawkins is with us, the president of Students for Life of America, and she joins us this morning from Pittsburgh. And Kristen, welcome. Really good to have you on the show as well.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Daniel, I think we need some clarity on the fact that, again, this op-ed was written by the outgoing editor-in-chief. You are the new editor-in-chief. Do you agree with the sentiments that Mark Galley expressed in that op-ed?
I think that what I would agree with is certainly Mark's right as editor-in-chief to offer that editorial. And Christianity Today certainly followed up with a wonderful piece where we shared, and I would share, the concerns regarding some of President Trump's conduct. But at the same time, I would also be open and eager for the conversation amongst evangelical Christians as to how, as you put it, his person squares with his policies as we try to bring our faith to the public square.
Do you perhaps it would be insightful for you to explain in your own words, let's put the op-ed that Mr. Galley wrote aside for a moment, in your own words about how you square the support of evangelical Christians for the president, and at the moment, a recent poll, 70% of white evangelicals support the president, and whether you believe that he should be removed. So where are you on those questions?
Personally, and I would say this not so much as editor-in-chief than as a former pastor and certainly an American citizen, I think my concerns around the impeachment and removal per se, I would love to see it be more of a bipartisan effort. Mm-hmm. I'm in the midst of plowing through Chernow's biography on Grant and reading about Andrew Johnson and what a notorious figure he was. But even in that case where the trial made it to the Senate, impeachment did not go, I mean, removal did not go forward out of concern for democracy and for the country. So I would be a proponent of the electoral process, pressing those things through. I think as Christians, though, there is just a wide array of opinion regarding what it looks like to be engaged in the public square. From those who see politics and political power as a means toward particular ends, things that Christians value, to those who see disengagement as the proper posture, and that instead we are folks who operate best from the margins and in protest and not in places where we might be seduced by power. And this has always been a tension in the church historically.
Kristen, let's set aside again for the moment Mr. Galley's assertion that he believes the president should be removed. But let's talk about some of the issues that he raised in the op-ed. I'm struck by his phrasing, and I want to know what you think of this. The impeachment hearings have illuminated the president's moral deficiencies for all to see. This damages the institution of the presidency, damages the reputation of our country, and damages both the spirit and the future of our people. How do you feel about that language?
Well, I think that's pretty strong language for, you know, Christianity today to essentially be setting themselves up as the speech and morality police of politicians. Because, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, some of the standards there that you're setting up, you're going to have to get to work, because there's a lot of people in Washington, D.C. that are going to have to come under the gun of Christianity today. And I think that's really what's interesting. And this, we've talked about this a lot, you know, even in 2016, and I'm sure this is going to come up again this year as we get closer to the election, of this question of, you know, who are we voting for as Christians? Are we voting for our pastor? Are we voting for a pope? Or are we voting for a political leader? And I think that was very strong language, because I think that language could apply to most people in Washington, D.C. And so I just felt that it was sort of hypocritical to say, you know, this is one person who we don't care for his language. We think his language is crass. We don't like the way he talks about his political opponents on Twitter, which certainly I could have agreement with many people on. But because of that, he should no longer be president. And I think that there's broader questions that we need to be asking ourselves of, are we looking at someone and saying their words are unchristian, therefore we shouldn't support them? Or are we looking at them and saying the policies that they're voting for go against everything we believe, the policies that they're championing, and their actions are going against what we believe? And I think that's a very important discussion that needs to be had.
Yeah, Kristen, I think I hear you saying two different things, though. But you started out saying, I'm uncomfortable with the idea that Christianity today have positioned themselves as the morality police. Isn't this precisely their platform, given the strong support that so many evangelical Americans have shown for the president?
I don't think that that's their platform as a Christian news organization. I think if you're going to be a Christian news organization that is going to evaluate every single politician, then go ahead and do that. But I wouldn't be selective about the political leaders that I start applying Christian morality to.
Daniel, just to that, because these are going to be questions that you're going to have to deal with. What do you think?
Yeah, let me start by saying this is my third day on the job, so I am I am ramping up. But I would say, as far as Christianity Today is concerned, that certainly when it comments on President Trump, you are speaking of the President of the United States, someone who is distinctive from, of course, Washington politicians writ large. And I would probably add that while Christianity Today certainly would never imagine itself to be the morality police, I think it has a responsibility as a news and opinion organization to enter the conversation, to contribute to that conversation. And hopefully, and certainly this would be my intention, to invite and to listen to a variety of voices from the Christian community so that somehow together we might rise above some of the vitriol to find not only commonality, but ways forward that are good for us as people, good for our country, and certainly good for us as Christians.
Let's do some of the listening. Let's go to the phones here. To Melissa in New Prague. Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for waiting.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Curious about what you're thinking. Yeah.
I have. I really appreciate this conversation because since the 2016 election of Donald Trump, it really bothered me how so many of my fellow Christians have continued to support the political career and attitudes that Trump and his close allies have put forth toward women, toward minorities, toward immigrants and refugees. My experience as a Christian is that Jesus, you know, reached out. He was very intentional about reaching out to those without power. And what I see from Trump and his allies is exactly the opposite. This op-ed, I applaud it, but it's late to the game, in my opinion.
You feel like Christianity today, it was high time that they spoke out on this? Did I hear that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I feel like it's been radio silence from most of the Christians who haven't agreed with the Trump stance and that kind of like far right attitude, and it's disturbing to me as a Christian, and I'm disappointed because it feels like it comes from a place of fear.
I appreciate the call, Melissa. Glad you're listening to this morning. Let me go to Jeff in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hi, Jeff. Good to have you on the line. What are you thinking?
Well, thanks for having me on. As an evangelical Christian, watching everything that's happened, I think there's just a lot of hate for Donald Trump, and it's hate that I think is uncalled for. He is just trying. You know, we've got all these laws in America that we're not even enforcing. We've got politicians that are taking our tax dollars and then feeding them back, funneling back to their kids. You know, maybe not everybody agrees with the Biden thing, but you know what? These are things that I think are immoral that Don is trying to make everybody aware of. He loves America, and I just don't know why there's so much hate for this man. And I just stand behind him for that reason. Now, until he does something that's going to do me different, he just looks like he's trying to do what's best for this country. And I just don't see why there's so many people that think he's immoral. He tweets because the news doesn't want to, the news hates him. I mean, that's just my opinion, and I don't know if I'm, you know, I try to keep an open mind about it. I don't want to, you know, be brainwashed or whatever they call it, but I just see what I see going on in America, and I must be the 50%. There's another 50% that feels the opposite of me.
Jeff, I'm glad you were listening this morning. I'm glad you had a chance to call. Kristen, I you hear in my question to listeners whether there are parts of the president's behavior, conduct, personality that Christians are deeply uncomfortable with. I heard that from Melissa. I think we're going to hear that from some other listeners this morning. But that does not subsume support for the policies that many Americans support and believe. I'd like to know how you reconcile that very question.
Sure. Well, I mean, from listening to Melissa's comments, you know, the natural question that I had was she equally upset and concerned when she heard Hillary Clinton in 2016 refer to people like me as a basket of deplorables? Or when President Obama mocked Christians as people to cling to our guns or religion, or who this year U.S. senators openly said that certain judges who met every qualification to be appointed federal judge were unfit to become a federal judge because they were Christian. To one judge, Senator Feinstein actually said, "The dogma lives loudly within you." And the question that I naturally have is, are you concerned when you hear that as well? And I think that's what, you know, what Jeff was getting to. There's so many Christians who do support President Trump. And despite, you know, rhetoric that they may not appreciate or they may not agree with and rhetoric they may never use themselves. But I think what you see is this for so long, evangelicals, those of us who believe, that, you know, abortion is a moral wrong, that it should never be permitted, that have views on traditional marriage and what traditional marriage should look like, have been made fun of in the public square, have been openly mocked by politicians, by those in power, by the elites in Hollywood. And President Trump gives people like me a voice, and he fights for those beliefs. And I mean, that's a thing that I struggled personally with in 2016 of, you know, there was a lot of skepticism of, is what he's saying and what he's promising to evangelicals and to the Christian community, will he fulfill those promises?
That's right. There was skepticism.
There absolutely was. And I went back and forth. I did not vote for him in the primary. I wrote many articles questioning whether or not we could trust him. But I ended up voting for him in the general election, and I'm very glad I did, because he has upheld those promises.
Daniel, you came here to participate, but also to listen. So I'm really curious about what you're hearing so far.
Well, I appreciate what Kristen said, because I think she is clear in her remarks about how particular issues that have been longstanding issues for evangelicals, abortion, traditional marriage, and others, that for President Trump to make strides in some of those areas that he has been deeply meaningful, I think, for folks who are bothered by the ways in which perhaps those or the character of Donald Trump that has been exhibited alongside those particular policy achievements. I think Christians would just love to see some kind of integrity or consistency there, so it doesn't feel like you're kind of making a deal with the devil, so to speak.
Can I come into this for just a second here? Because I don't want it to sound like this conversation is only about the way President Trump expresses himself. Mm. You hear a lot of objection from Christians and other voters of faith about the immigration policies that he has carried out, the beliefs that he has expressed about equality, some of the things that he said in the wake of Charlottesville. So this is not just about the crassness with which he tweets and sometimes expresses himself.
No, that's right.
There's also policy behind some of the great concern here, yes?
No, that's right. And I mean, you know, what makes it hard to talk about this in a concise fashion is not only Christianity and enormous collection of tribes that have particular passions driven by a deeply held faith in so many areas. But you have this, you know, president who, unlike many of his predecessors, was already a larger-than-life figure, and who just drives all of the conversation in our country. And, you know, coming into this season where already partisanship and polarity was so strong, it seems to incite all of that, so that common ground not only seems hard to achieve, but also a kind of compromise that folks feel like is a sign of weakness. And I think that part of what Mark Galley was yearning for, and certainly I would yearn for, is leadership that would take us toward that space where we can find some political compromise for the common good. Mm-hmm. But this seems to be the struggle.
Daniel Harrell is with us this morning. He is the incoming, well, brand new, 3 days on the job, editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. He's the former senior pastor at the Colonial Church in Edina, and he's taking over Christianity Today. Brand new, but eventually moving to the headquarters in Chicago to take over. Kristen Hawkins is with us. She's the president of Students for Life of America, and we are hashing out and having, I think, an interesting conversation here about an op-ed in mid-December from Christianity Today that argued that President Trump has abrogated his role as a moral leader of America. He has inflicted damage on both the spirit and the future of the American people. That is the Mark Galley's actual words in this op-ed. And we've come to you this morning with a conversation about, if you identify as an evangelical Christian or a person of faith, do you struggle with reconciling your support for some of the president's policies with what Christianity Today is calling his moral deficiencies? Do you worry about the rift that both Kristen and Daniel have talked about this morning that is developing that President Trump's behavior has caused among Christian believers. 651-227-6000. I should say, if you get a busy signal on the phone lines, call us back. I want to hear from as many people as we can get in on the conversation today. 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the upper Midwest, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. To Mary in St. Paul. Hi, Mary. Good to have you on the line. What are you thinking?
Hi, Carrie. Thank you so much for having this conversation, because this has been bothering me so badly. I'll try to be as civil as possible. I do identify as a Christian, and I might have called myself an evangelical at some point, but given the evangelicals lining up for Trump, I've ceased to call myself that at this point. But one thing that just really, really bothers me, I'm also a feminist, and I'm not just talking about, like when you had mentioned that people, you know, this isn't about the language that he's using.
It's not only, I said, like Mary. Yeah.
Right. Right. Exactly. That there's a lot of policy behind it as well. But what really is bothering me about the impeachment is that, you know, when Bill Clinton was being impeached, Christianity was up in arms because of, you know, this adulterous relationship and how his morals did not, it was all important that the morals and the character of the president, whether or not they were doing a good job or not, that was an all important issue. And now it just seems to be completely cast aside. The accusations against him from women, and you don't even have to just listen to his tweets, just the stuff that he said on that bus, you know, with the hot mic. It's just like, it's just repulsive to me. And I don't see how people like Franklin Graham can stand up and say, you know, he's our man.
He's
my man.
Yeah, Mary, we have so many calls coming in. I think I have the essence of what you're saying, and I'm wondering how Kristen is hearing it. Hi, Kristen. What do you think?
Well, I think being evangelical is a perspective on faith. It's not a perspective on President Trump or other leaders. And when Mary was talking about impeachment, you know, President Clinton wasn't impeached for being an adulteress or, you know, preying on women sexually, but it was for perjury, and that's an actual crime. And so I think that we hear this a lot on campuses, you know, of this, well, pro-lifers are hypocritical because we are against abortion, but yet those who advocate for abortion don't see pro-lifers as those who are helping children who are in foster care or mothers who, after they've given birth to their children. And sadly, I say, well, you haven't looked around then, because there isn't that hypocrisy. We're the ones running all the pregnancy centers and signing up willingly and with open arms to welcome in foster children into our homes. And so I think that, you know, I hear this often from people who disagree politically or with a different policy. We'll say, well, you know, Christians are just hypocritical because they didn't like Bill Clinton and they wanted to see him impeached, but they love Donald Trump. And I think, one, those are two very different situations that we're talking about. And two, I think Christians are, you know, we're allowed to have a perspective and have views on public policy and to use our voice and to use our vote. And when you look at the policies of the Democratic politicians that are currently running for president of the United States versus the policies of President Trump and the people that he's appointed and to serve in his administration, it's very clear what candidate lines up with very important topics that evangelicals care about.
Kristen, let me ask you about some other language that Mark Galley used in this op-ed, which I think some of our callers are getting to here. He writes, none of the president's positives can balance the moral and political danger we face under a leader of such grossly immoral character. What I hear Mr. Galley arguing there is that Trump's behavior is a kind of psychic wound to the American people, whether we know it or not, and it is going to, it's going to wreak some pretty serious damage in the years to come. Exaggeration, how do you see it? Do you worry about that?
Well, I worry about the overall state of discourse in the United States in general.
How corrosive it is.
Exactly. I don't think that President Trump has led us to this point. If you disagree with, you know, the words he uses and the manner he speaks about others, I think it's more of a product of what we've gotten ourselves to the point of. I mean, I remember when I started working in Washington, D.C., there was able to have a conversation in the U.S. Senate. You know, if you remember, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was overwhelmingly voted in and confirmed as a Supreme Court judge, despite the fact that, you know, almost half of the Senate disagreed with her positions. And so I think that's what's really interesting when you read this op-ed that was on Christianity Today of saying, well, his words are immoral, his what he says is unchristian-like, therefore he's unfit to serve in office. And that's what I remarked at the beginning of, if you're going to apply this standard to every politician, then there's really not going to be any, I would say that you would have a hard time finding people in Washington, D.C. who can serve, because or we're looking at a sin test.
I just want to say again, it's not just about what he says and how he says it. It is also about some of the beliefs that he has expressed, and I would imagine some of the policies that he's decided on out of those beliefs. Daniel, do you want to get in here?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would add to that point is it's not just words, right, but the words and the policies he holds as president of the United States, that there is power he wields that makes his choices monumentally more impactful than anything anyone else could do. And so part of the concern, I think, from the Christianity Today vantage point is Christians' alignments with the person, the president, as he's exhibited his character and himself in office, that is problematic for Christians, policies aside.
We're going to get a look at the latest news. I want to say something about some of the listeners' communications on Twitter. I'm hoping that you're going to keep this civil and not personal, because you can hear that we are having a philosophical conversation this morning, and in some ways a disagreement. But we are doing that with some civility, and we're keeping it philosophical. And that's what I want from you on Twitter. At Carrie MPR, 651-227-6000 to get in on the conversation this morning. If you identify as an evangelical Christian or a person of faith, whether you struggle with reconciling your support for some of the president's policies with what Christianity Today has said in this op-ed, the moral deficiencies that CT believes have damaged both the spirit and the future of the American people. Kristen Hawkins is with us today. She's the president of Students for Life of America, and Daniel Harrell is with us. He is the new editor-in-chief of Christianity Today. More of your calls and questions on the other side of news. Again, keep it civil on Twitter. Back to our conversation now. Daniel Harrell with us. He's the new editor-in-chief of Christianity Today, and Kristen Hawkins is with us, the president of Students for Life of America. I want to read a couple of tweets here. Sarah says, as a former evangelical who spent time at Focus on the Family in college, CT has a long history of weighing in on what is appropriately evangelical in the political spheres. Paul says on Twitter, the bottom line is that to ascribe evangelical values to Trump exposes the degree to which the evangelical world is not concerned with the gospel as much as political power. Daniel and Kristen, I want you both to speak to that. That has followed in this debate about the CT op-ed. Kristen, maybe to you first on that. There are people who say that this is a cynical play by evangelical Christians who feel like they can wield power through support of the president. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that as Christians, you know, like I said at the beginning, we are not voting for a pastor. We're not even voting for a moral leader. I can look at many historical examples of people who weren't perfect. Martin Luther King Jr. certainly comes to mind, but carried out great works, who did great things in our nation. And I think that's the question we have to ask ourselves as Christians when we go to vote. Who are we trying to pick? Are we trying to pick a pastor, or are we trying to pick leaders, given the limited options that we have before us, who will support the policies that we most prioritize as Christians? Because as Christians, there's a lot of policies, political policies, that we have very strong beliefs on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a question for Christianity Today. It's a question for Daniel, is what policies do you prioritize when voting, and which candidates do you think uphold and fight for those policies? Because I go through the running checklist in my mind, and it's very clear that President Trump is fighting for those values and is fighting for those policies that evangelicals know are at the forefront of public debate.
Daniel?
And the Democratic Party has done otherwise.
I think I would start by just pulling back a bit to underscore that at the heart of what it means to be an evangelical is this personal experience of faith in Jesus Christ, this regard for Scripture as authoritative in our lives, and then interpreting that and then how that plays out in our day-to-day lives and our public lives. I mean, things just spread out from there, so that what you have in the evangelical community is this loose collection of tribes that runs the gamut. So when you begin to talk about policies, you really can't speak monolithically about evangelicalism writ large, because, for instance, in our country, there are those who would prioritize, say, abortion, others who would prioritize, say, immigration. And politically in our country, those two don't show up in any of the parties together similarly. So this is the challenge, I think, for evangelical Christians, because there's not going to be one party or candidate that's going to cover all of the things that Christians have expressed passion for.
I mean, this is something you're going to have to wrangle with.
I know.
That's exactly right.
It's not the Christian experience, the evangelical experience isn't monolithic here. I cut you off, Kristen. What did you want to say?
I was agreeing with Daniel. It's very, discouraging for us as those of us who advocate for abortion to be made illegal and unthinkable again. We will win when both parties are actually fighting for our votes. And so this is something we say over and over again of, we wish it wasn't a one-party solution. We want both parties. And I think that is a struggle, what Daniel highlighted, of Christians of trying to say, these are all these policies and values that we hold dear, and these are the candidates that are going to deeply hurt those policies, or here are the candidates that are going to help those who are most vulnerable. I think as Christians, though, we know we have to be engaged in politics, because politics and political power allows us to help and defend the poor and the most vulnerable. But I think when you're as a Christian, when we struggle with these issues, I think you make a list and you prioritize that list, and you say, what are the things that were the non-negotiables? If any candidate believes that killing a child in the ninth month of pregnancy is a moral good and should be taxpayer funded, I can't agree with them. I don't think on anything else. I would be very, very surprised that I couldn't vote for anybody like that, because how would I trust them on any other issue? And so we prioritize these questions of, when we talk about immigration, I talk about that a lot on college campuses, because I work with a lot of Latino Christians who are pro-life, who are involved in the pro-life movement, but have deeply personal stories, family members who are trying to immigrate to the United States, who have had to go through our broken immigration system. And so that is something that they care about. But I think that there's, for that, there's so many things on both sides.
Okay.
That we need to talk about.
Lori called in to say, I listen to Faith Radio. I want someone to talk about how actively President Trump works to divide the nation. It seems like Christians are rationalizing that the ends justify the means. Why are Christians now supporting winning at all costs? Meredith in Woodbury called to say, I'm an evangelical Christian. I'm completely opposed to Donald Trump. I think that other Christians only support him because he's pro-life. And I can't move past that. It's completely hypocritical. To the phones, to Amy in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hi, Amy. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi, thanks. I initially was just going to say that, I think the hard part about having these conversations is the fact that for so many people, it isn't just about policy. Many, many people in this country, people of color, LGBTQ friends of mine, they feel like their very lives are being attacked right now. And people's humanity is not up for debate. You know, we can debate healthcare policy, but people's humanity, the humanity of the children dying at the border because of this president's policy, their humanity is not up for debate. And I think that people feel that so deeply that it's very hard to have a conversation with people who say they're Christian, but then the only pro-life issue they care about is abortion. And I wasn't going to even mention abortion. To be an OBGYN. And I happen to know the reality of abortion in this country is vastly different than the rhetoric of abortion. Babies are not aborted in the ninth month in this country. It does not happen. Okay. I am an OBGYN. This is my life. This is what I do. And I think the Christian community has sold out for one issue. They have given up the fact that life is not, the life of the fetus is not the only life that matters. And they have sold their soul to try to get abortion outlawed. And they have sold their souls on everything else. And it is horrific to me. I am a Christian too. And I realize that this may be hard for some people to hear, but abortion will never go away because there are medical reasons why people sometimes have to choose that. They have to choose their life sometimes.
Amy, I will say this. I appreciate the call. I think the other thing that I'm hearing in the tenor of the conversation is something that Daniel's definitely going to have to wrestle with, and I assume Kristen does too when she's on college campuses, which is, you know, politics isn't logical. Although we think that we vote on policies, that's not the way we vote. And there's all kinds of neuroscientific research to show this. It's very emotional. And what tugs us one way, you know, tugs us the other way. So there is not some checklist that we go down and it's all supremely logical. And I guess you're going to have to wrestle with this, Daniel, again, as you decide what Christianity Today is going to weigh in on and how political it's going to be.
That's very true. I'm grateful. I also hold a PhD in psychology. So
you do.
I do.
Well,
I do.
Okay.
So we'll see how that helps me out. I think one thing I want to just add to this is really at the core teachings of Jesus is this suspicion of political power.
Mm-hmm.
That there is this realization that governments lie, that governments can't be trusted, that's not where our ultimate hope should ever go. And I think as Christians, we're constantly living in that tension. We want our governments to promote what is good and right and true and beautiful. But at the same time, because governments are what they are, there's severe limits on their capacity to do that. So we have to be careful constantly as Christians as to where we're putting our hope and where we're putting our trust and expectation. It's a real challenge for us.
You know, Kristen, I was thinking about this show, I was also thinking about the cynicism with which so many of us look at America's institutions. And you know that the church hasn't escaped this. I mean, the Catholic Church sex scandal, the harassment that and sexual assault that some women have experienced at the hands of church leaders. It really makes me wonder whether there are any public institutions where we can turn for this kind of high moral character that I think we're still seeking. Do you get into that when you're talking to young Americans on college campuses?
Absolutely. And this is a question that we have, especially with Christians who are struggling with prioritizing the issues of what are the issues that are most dear to me and are most important to me. And I say, well, our objective within the church is different than the objective of our political leaders. And so we try to seek out, and no matter what, you know, field we're in, we try to live out our Christian values and our Christian beliefs. So if we're a voter, if we're in business, if we run for political office, we try to be a Christian in every facet of our life. It doesn't just stop after we leave church on Sunday morning. It follows us throughout our entire week. I think what Amy's comments point so
brilliantly to is why we pick, you know, candidates by issues and not by our feelings or our emotions. I think it's very important. That's why I said, you know, if you're struggling with this issue, make a list. Make a list of the issues of those things that matter the most to you and where you believe the most good can come. And I agree with Amy. You know, people's humanity is not up for debate. I mean, that's what I do in the pro-life movement every day, is I fight for the humanity of pre-born baby girls and baby boys. And it is horrific. And, it, you know, I think this thing of, you know, abortion, and her comments were obviously wrong about how abortions do not happen in the ninth month. You can go to Google right now
the
and
show,
type in Leroy Carhart.
I've had plenty of, Kristen, I've had lots of conversations about the policy of abortion. That's not what this show is. Okay. So do you feel like you've completed what you wanted to say there? I don't want to cut you off.
But my point is that, one, I think her comments were inaccurate. Guttmacher Institute says that abortions happen in the ninth month, and we know 12,000 abortions a year happen after 20
Kristen,
weeks.
Kristen, I'm not sure you heard me on that, because we're not going to debate the policy of abortion here.
I was just correcting inaccurate information. I think for what Amy is saying, though, is what she's saying is, well, you know, my friends were hurt by President Trump's words on something, some issue that he said. And I think the point is, we need to pick candidates when we go and vote based on the issues and where we think the most good can be done. And I think when it comes to that, you know, the issue of abortion, we have to pay attention to that and the death count that is racking up every single day. And that's why as evangelicals, we prioritize that issue of life, because we know what's happening inside
I think I've got that. We still have really full phone lines, so I want to hear from as many more callers as we can. To Matt in Minneapolis. Hi, Matt.
Hi there.
Thanks.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for waiting.
Yeah, no worries. So I grew up in a Christian home. I went to a conservative Christian college in the Twin Cities, Bethel University. I graduated with dual degrees in biblical and theological studies and psychology.
Yeah.
And I went on to work in ministry for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's my context. So I wanted to ask two questions. What is the litmus test that the Bible tells us to use when choosing a leader? And I think specifically of the list of tests or requirements of a deacon in the leadership of the church. That's kind of my first question.
Okay.
And then the second.
We'll put that to the pastor. Okay.
Yeah. My second, more of a comment is, I believe this was kind of a defining moment for the church, capital C church. And we are now seeing just my generation leaving the church after the election.
Right.
I myself have no longer call myself an evangelical Christian because of the election, because of the way people voted. I believe that the church will begin to diminish in its role in society because they chose power and an attempt for earthly power over a kingdom mindset that would have been more trusting of God's kind
of. The first question there, Daniel, the litmus test as we decide who to choose. Does the Bible give us any guidance on that?
I would say within the context of church and church leadership, yes. Outside of that, it's up for grabs. I think that when you talk about the history of leadership and in Scripture, usually, you know, God did the picking in the Bible. As far as humans go, over the history of the church, I mean, it depends on your, governmental polity, whether you're a monarchist or a democracy or whatever. And so there's not an easy litmus test for that, no.
I think he was also concerned about younger generations moving away from the church.
Yeah,
you see the numbers.
Yeah,
right?
We're all concerned about that, and you know exactly why. There's not just a single reason for that, I'm sure, but certainly what you've already mentioned in this deep suspicion of institutions, be they political, religious, educational, governmental, is hugely problematic. And I think the conversation amongst those of us who are pastors is this redeemable, or do we just need something completely brand new? And this is where our faith kicks in. And while the church may be on the ropes As far as an institution goes, our prayer and our hope is that the church as the people of God will perhaps find new expression, and we want to be on board with that, whatever that looks like.
Kristen, what do you think? Irredeemable or?
Well, I think that, you know, when we think about this, and I hear this sometimes on campuses, of I've left my faith because Christians voted for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And I think if you leave your faith because of one candidate being elected to office, you have a bigger issue there. And it's just an excuse that's being used. I have friends that have, you know, left their faith and began questioning their faith, and it's a series of events that happens within their life. And this trend of younger Christians, of younger evangelicals, falling away from their faith, that was happening way before 2016. I think there's a much broader, what Daniel was getting at, there's a much broader question there. And what is going wrong within our churches, and what are we not preparing our young people for, and what are we not talking to our young people about? And so when they get to college and their worldview is challenged, do they know how to defend their beliefs? Because if they don't know how to defend their worldview and their beliefs, it's going to be shaken. They're going to start wondering what is wrong with those beliefs they were raised with. I think one statement that the caller made about how in 2016 Christians chose earthly power over kingdom mindset. My very simple question to him and to any of those who agree with him would be, do you believe Hillary Clinton had a kingdom mindset? Was she a better candidate to vote for? Because as you'll recall, in 2016, we had two options
yes,
as Christians.
Which brings
either
us
Donald
back
Trump
to
was
the
going
choices.
To be president,
yeah.
Or Hillary Clinton was going to be president. And so I find it really hypocritical when we hear these statements of, well, you know, Donald Trump doesn't have a kingdom mindset. Well, then, okay, then can you tell me that Hillary Clinton does? Because we had a binary choice as Christians, and we had to make a choice, because we do know that politics, as I mentioned before, you know, politics isn't the only place we engage in our faith. It's one place we live our faith, but politics has the ability to serve and defend the most vulnerable, to serve the poor, to make things better, and it's a way for us to live our values. But I don't, when I go to vote, I know I'm not voting for a pastor. I know I'm not voting for a pope. I'm not saying I'm going to agree with every policy or thing that candidate's ever going to say. What I'm simply saying is, this is a candidate who aligns with the issues that I most prioritize and is going to help bring about the most good in our society.
Kristen, I'm really grateful you were game to participate in the conversation today. Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Kristen Hawkins is president of Students for Life of America. I have one question for you, Daniel. I wonder if you saw and see, as the new editor-in-chief, an op-ed like this is persuading Christians who might have been ambivalent about one side or the other, are looking for some kind of guidance about, you know, how to think about this in the coming years, or is it really to ignite the kind of conversations that we just had?
I think my hope going forward as editor-in-chief is how can we frame these conversations? How can we provide language, perspective? Like, for instance, when Kristen just mentioned, is it Donald Trump or Hillary? Well, in fact, it's not just binary. You can vote for a third-party candidate. You cannot vote at all. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of alternatives that you can choose to do. As a Christian, if you wanted to do that, I think what we want to do at Christianity Today is, like, how can we create we're doing this. How can we create space, a forum, language to allow constructive conversation to ensue so that as Christians, you know, we're aligned with, again, what is good and right and beautiful as much as we can.
I guess you'll be talking to the IT people since the website crashed. After
they're doing great, they're doing great,
and they've
recovered. They're doing fab. It's a fabulous staff, and all of this was unexpected, but here we go.
But it's good. Hey, I look forward to talking to you once you've settled into the job. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. and thanks.